night surgery, yes, of course. And this evening we are talking about breast cancer. I have with me, firstly, Dr. Fatima, and then I have to apologize because they gave me the title and the, now he's, what's the name, giving me signs. No, 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 but it's only but right. It's actually Professor Justin. Professor, I apologize. As I said, that was information given to me, but I need to do the necessary. It must be done. So, okay, we're not going to go into that, the argument on that one. But, okay, I have the two here this evening talking to us about breast cancer. And as you've heard, some very, very important information that's been shared with us thus far. I'm going to read this question that's been posed to me or to us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Good evening. I was tested positive for breast cancer last year, November. I had my surgery in December where one of my breasts had to be removed completely. I had my radiation this year in April and is currently on meds for 5 years. Alhamdulillah, I'm still doing well. I still do all my housework on my own and dealing with two teenagers. It works.
That's a very good story.
Good story.
I'm glad we like to hear positive outcomes.
Right, right, right. Okay, this one, is there any alternative to tamoxifen? I had a lumpectomy, completed 6 months chemo and 5 weeks of radiation. I was stage one invasive ductal cancer.
Perhaps at this stage we should introduce the concept of individualization.
Right.
And that means that we look very precisely what is the individual patient's risk that the cancer comes back.
Hmm.
Tamoxifen is a very old drug. It was introduced into the markets in 1969,
right.
Initially as a fertility drug, and then its effect on breast cancer was discovered, and we have been using it for more than now 50 years.
Hmm.
It is a very safe drug.
Okay.
It's a very effective drug, so one would advise patients to take it if it's appropriate for them.
Hmm.
Having said that, there are side effects to every form of medical manipulation, and we then must individualize. We must have a look at what is the patient's risk of recurrence, and stage one breast cancer shouldn't have a high risk of recurrence.
Right.
And here one should weigh up quality of life versus, and therefore one should look very clearly at this. Generally, I would not use tamoxifen if the patient's chances of benefiting from it are less than about 1 to 3%, then
okay.
I would very much look into that, because
right.
that means conversely that the patient chances of not benefiting of it
right.
and suffering the side
right.
effects are 97 out of 100,
yeah,
and you don't
yeah,
want that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I think one of, what, one of the things that Prof's trying to touch on there is that when we talk about individualization to the person who posed the question, there's a lot of things that we have to think about. So your age plays a massive role. So your menopausal status plays another role. There are tests that we can do to see the efficacy of the or the benefit of the drug, and I think the test that the Prof I think was referring to was the mama print,
mm-hmm.
And that actually looks at the specifically the genetics of the tumor, not your genetics, not your genome, your DNA, or your, we're not talking about the BRCA mutations and that sort of thing. It looks at the genetics of the tumor and how inherently aggressive that tumor is and whether a person will actually benefit from a treatment is now, as Prof put it very, very nicely, is highly individualized. So the answer to your question is yes, there is alternatives to tamoxifen,
right.
but we don't know enough from what you have told us
about the,
offer you any alternative.
This person, you've mentioned about the DNA, and immediately what comes to mind is I want to ask the question, is breast cancer hereditary?
The answer to that is because in about 5 to 15% of cases, we can establish that there is a genetic predisposition to it.
Right.
And we can test for that too.
Right.
And there are specific mutations in the South African population present.
Hmm.
And these days we are not testing for breast cancer genes 1 and 2 anymore. But we're testing for a panel of 70 to 84 genes that we fully sequence. We're not looking for individual mutations anymore, but we're looking through the entire gamut of cancer-causing genes. And this plays an important part, number one, in the treatment. For example, if a younger person is diagnosed with breast cancer and has a disease-causing mutation, let's say, for example, in the CHEK gene, CHEK, CHEK2 gene, then this becomes very high, and then surgical treatment will be a bilateral skin areola sparing mastectomy, for example. So for these patients, it's inheritable. But for me, in general, if you look at the vast majority of breast cancer, it's actually a lifestyle disease.
Right.
And that is very important for the listeners to know.
Okay. Now,
and
the
biggest factor here...
Yeah, sorry, Prof. Coming in there, but... Prof just said something. It's a lifestyle disease. Please elaborate on that.
Okay.
Please.
All right. It's actually very simple.
Yeah.
If you are obese, you increase your breast cancer risk by more than 50%.
Okay.
If you drink alcohol, for example, more than 50 grams a day, then you will increase your breast cancer risk by, again, about 50%.
Okay.
If you smoke and have a certain genetic setup, you also increase your breast cancer risk. Conversely, if you exercise strenuously for 4 hours per week, then you actually halve your breast cancer
risk.
So these are all lifestyle.
Okay.
Lifestyle factors and modifiable lifestyle factors.
Right, right, right.
You can choose how much you drink, you can choose how much you exercise, you can choose how much you eat.
Right, right, right. We hear you. we off one. And then the listener also says, another listener says, Shukran, thank you for the program. What contraceptives can cause breast cancer?
So that's a very heavy or rather weighted question. Contraceptives per se, that the contraceptives per se do not actually cause breast cancer. So there's a lot of literature that says that supports using that says that various contraceptives are actually safe. But it's not about that. It's about duration of using contraceptives and the type of contraceptive.
Okay.
So, for example, we see that the association of the risk of cancer increases with the duration of using specific contraceptives. So if you are now on your third Mirena, which means you've been using progesterone contraceptive for now 15 years or in excess of 15 years, we start to see the risk of the cancers increasing. And the same goes for your oral contraceptive tablets. So if you want a safe contraceptive, we're talking about things like the copper T, which is a non-hormonal contraceptive. The other options are, the condoms, abstinence, all of those things are stimulated by hormones.
Right.
So obviously the longer you use it, the longer you manipulate your hormones, the higher your risk.
The prof is laughing, and I can't help laughing when you said abstinence. Prof said, what?
Abstinence generally doesn't work that well. But I want to make another point here
and
clarify this a little bit more. Fatima has touched upon this. But in general, any contraceptives that contains a progesterone, a hormonal component is actually increasing breast cancer risk. Pure estrogen doesn't.
Okay.
And we know this actually quite well. Then the other point I want to make, the safest contraception for women if the man gets a vasectomy. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So
Fair enough. So men can contribute, yes.
Okay, so there you go. And now I can see some of the men say, that's enough of that program. Switch over to another channel. No, but as we've been talking about this evening, a very, very, very important topic. That's, of course, breast cancer. Now, almost time for us to wrap it up. However, we've been focusing on the women. But we've also said that men can also get breast cancer. Talk to us a little bit about men getting breast cancer.
So males with breast cancer, so they... they say over the age of 60.
Okay.
But I mean, as you get older, your risk of any cancer start to increase. Mm. But the risk of a male getting breast cancer is, as Prof put it right at the beginning, is maybe 1 in 1,000. So it's not a frequent cancer.
For males.
It's, right. I think, somewhere about at around the 34th most common cancer in males. So it's it's not high up on your list.
Right.
If you want to look at something high up on your list as a male, you're talking about prostate cancer.
Right.
That's the most
common.
Number one. Second most common, colon cancer. If you're a smoker, there's no doubt it's lung cancer.
Right.
But other risk factors, males are about 4 to 5 times more likely to carry a genetic mutation.
Which means?
So especially the BRCA, BRCA 1 or 2 mutation, disease-causing mutations. So in a family where there is a known genetic mutation in the BRCA 1 or 2 gene, check 2 ATM mutations, the males are not free of risk, because they're always like, the woman gets the breast cancer, I don't have to worry.
No.
If the males also need to get tested because they are also at risk of getting the breast cancer.
Right.
If a male has breast cancer, even the government hospitals in South Africa would actually support genetic testing in those patients, because it has such a huge implication for the woman in that family.
So just explain this to me. I always hear when I talk to the professionals, talking about, as Prof has also mentioned earlier, about estrogen. And now we're saying, males. Obviously, we know males...
males have estrogen.
Does males have estrogen?
Yes,
we always
do.
Thought it's only women that's got it, and of course with menopause and all of those. So you say males are also... they also have it.
Yes, and what about those guys that use all those anabolic steroids USM and all of those bodybuilders? If you're going to use all of those stuffs, you must take the side effects that come with it.
Okay, Prof.
By the way, women also have got testosterone.
100%.
So now we're going into the genes.
That's why you get some feisty women.
Prof, leave that. But yes, so almost time for us to wrap it up. But to conclude, those listening to us right now, those that have had the benefit of getting this wonderful information from you, what would be your final word to those that suspect that I could be, them concerned? What would you tell them? Dr. Fatima?
One line. Ignorance in this scenario is not bliss.
All right.
Have it checked out.
All right.
Put your mind at ease, and if it is that, the worst case scenario is that you have breast cancer. Mm. And then what? Then you get it treated. Mm. And then it's treated, and then it's over.
Mm.
And then you carry on with your life.
Right. Prof?
First thing is, don't panic. Breast cancer, whether we treat it today or in a week's time or even in 4 weeks' time, doesn't make a difference.
Right.
So you can make your moves very, very thoughtfully.
Mm.
See that you're being treated in a multidisciplinary clinic where around the table there's a surgeon, a radiation oncologist, a medical oncologist,
a team,
and a plastic surgeon.
Right, right.
And only to seek out a multidisciplinary clinic will already increase your survival by about 50-60%.
Right.
It's more influence than any form of treatment except for surgery.
Right.
So that is very important. And number three, be aware, breast cancer is curable these days. Don't delay it. Have it checked out. and chances are that you will lead a normal life afterwards.
I need to get information from this multi-purpose?
Multidisciplinary
clinic that the two of you are also very much in.
We're in a very fortunate position. The big teaching hospitals, Tigerberg and Gedurtiski, both have very good combined clinics, multidisciplinary clinics. Mm. Then also in the public, in the private sector, it's a little bit more diffuse. But if you ask around, there are several multidisciplinary clinics around. We are not allowed by Health Professions Council to tell you here which colleagues there are. But if you ask around, then it will become pretty clear who the big guns are here in the Western Cape. And once again, being treated in such a clinic can save your life.
If I may ask, we have people on the program here. I have doctors, professors, specialists. They would give their telephone numbers, and it's ethical. I've had Professor Carla with me always, who would then tell us. So there's nothing wrong in you telling us where people can go. I know I've had, Dr. Fatima here with me in the studio already, and I know she's somewhere out in, is it Durbanville?
Benarama.
You see, I keep on going to Durbanville.
You're welcome to find myself and Professor Athelstead at our practice. It's at Athelstead Hussein and Associates, and our contact number is 021-930-2662. Of course, we're not the only guys out there. And very importantly, in your health.
Right. Well, there you go. Just the number again, 021-930-2662. That's the number to dial. And then, of course, you can ask to speak to the doctor. I'm sure the professor will come to the phone if professor available. But, okay, of course.
We are a team of four doctors.
Yes, of course. So, Professor, it's been wonderful having you in the program this evening.
It was great fun. Thanks,
lovely
listeners, for listening to us.
And also, Dr. Fatima Shukran, for being here.
JazakAllah khair for
All the very, very best, all the success. And once again, thank you so much for that wonderful, wonderful information that you shared this evening. As I told Prof and I told Dr. Fatima, just by looking at the reaction of your listeners will show you when you're doing a good job, and you did a wonderful job. So shukran, thank you so much, all the very best, good night. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Thank you very much, and good night, listeners.